Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Bava Metzia, daf Lamed Vav. We are holding on the last line of Lamed Hey Amid Beis, Amar Rabbi Yirmiya. Just to review a little bit, the Mishnah had a discussion about somebody who rents a cow to somebody else, and the renter then lends it to a third party. And the Gemara had discussed various cases, various details related to that. So now the Gemara is going to pick up discussing the different shvuos that the different people involved in this transaction could have to make. The different oaths that potentially the renter could make. You have a question?
Just a question.
Yeah.
When somebody rents a cow out to somebody, he rents it to a particular person, doesn't that person need permission of the original owner to rent it to somebody else because even the owner may not want that other person?
Right. So that's going to be part of the discussion today. Based on this Mishnah, the Gemara is going to bring the Mishnah as a question, indicating what you're saying also, right? The Gemara is going to have a discussion, we'll get to that, about a Shomer Shemasr LeShomer, a watchman who gives an object over to another watchman. And one of the positions is that that's impermissible, that you're not allowed to give it over to another watchman, because Ein Pikdoni, Ein Ritzoni Shia Pikdoni Biad Acher. I don't want my item to be in somebody else's possession. And the Gemara is going to bring as a question to that this Mishnah. So hopefully we'll leave that for a little bit later. We're going to try to get into those details of why you're allowed to give the item over without somebody's permission. The Gemara is going to have a way to address the Mishnah and address that question. But so again, the Gemara is going to discuss the different type of oaths that the renter and that the borrower could have to make. Then the Gemara is going to discuss what I just mentioned about Shomer Shemaser LeShomer, a watchman giving over to a different watchman. And on Amud Beis, we're going to have a sugya, which is not exactly the sugya of Tchilaso B'Pshia V'Sofo B'Ones, when something starts with negligence and then ends in a case of onsen, something that happens against your will, but it's clearly related to that. And that sugya is Pasha V'Yotza La'agam U'Meita Kedarka. If you're watching an animal and you're negligent with it and it goes out to the swamp and then it dies naturally, something that would have happened not through negligence, what exactly is going to be the details with that? So before we start with Rabbi Yirmiya, just some introduction that might be helpful. The Gemara is going to discuss two types of oaths, and there are two types of oaths that we should be aware of. One is basically a basic oath, which is known as a shvuas bitui, and if one violates this oath, if they make an oath and then it turns out that they swore falsely, they would have to bring a korban chatas. Another type of shvuas bitui is a korban chatas. And then the other type of shvua, the other type of oath would be if you are denying a claim of money. If you're denying a claim of money and it turns out that you testified, that you swore falsely, then you're going to be chayav and asham. So that's the discussion the Gemara is going to pick up with in this case where somebody rents his cow to somebody else and that person lends it to a third party. There are different types of oaths that the renter and the lender and the borrower could have to make. So let's discuss that. Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, bottom of Laman Hayam Abayis. Pa'amim sheshneam b'chatas, pa'amim sheshneam b'asham, pa'amim sheasocher b'chatas v'ashoa b'asham, and pa'amim sheasocher b'asham v'ashoa b'chatas. Says Rabbi Yirmiya, there could be times where both the borrower and the renter could have to bring a korban chatas. They would have to bring a sin offering for a shvuas bitui, for the violation of a basic type of oath. There could be times where they both have to bring an asham, they both have to bring a korban asham for a violation of an oath that carries with it a monetary claim. There could be times where the renter has to bring a korban chatas for a regular type of oath, but the shoel, the borrower, has to bring a korban asham for a monetary type of oath. And then there are times where the renter would have to bring an asham for the monetary type of oath, and the borrower would just have to bring a korban chatas for the normal, common shuas bitu. So HaKetzad, what exactly is the case where all of these types of korbanos, all of these permutations would come up? So says the Gemara, well, we have a basic klal, which we just sort of introduced, that kfiras mamon asham, if you're denying a claim of money, then you're going to have to bring a korban asham, because that's when the whole parsha of the korban asham is going to apply, an oath where you're denying a monetary claim. And bitui svatayim chatas, if it's just a shuas bitui, what we've been calling a common oath, then you would have to bring a korban chatas. So that's the rule. We introduced it just to make it more clear, and the Gemara says it clearly. And now the Gemara is going to explain these four permutations, how exactly you would have them. Pa'amim sheshneam b'chatas. There could be times where both the renter and the borrower have to bring a korban chatas, which means a common oath was violated, and that's why they just have to bring a korban chatas. So what's the case? Kegon shemeita kedarka v'amru nensa. If the reality is that the cow died naturally, and the socher And the shoel, the borrower, and the renter are saying that the para died by will, against their will, by force, by something that was out of their control. So socher de bein kach u bein kach mifter pater bechatas. The renter is going to be exempt from any obligations related to this cow in either case. If it died naturally, as actually happened, he would be exempt. And if it died through an onus, through something that was out of his control, he would also be exempt. So regardless of what happened, whether it's the actual reality or the claim that he's making, the renter is going to be exempt. And therefore, his oath is not an oath that carries with it any monetary discussion. Either way, he's exempt. So the oath that he's making doesn't carry with it a denial of a claim about money. And therefore, regardless, he's going to bring a korban chatas. If it's found that he swore falsely, he's going to have to bring a normal sin offering for a normal common type of oath. But shoel de bein kach u bein kach chiyu v'mechayev b'chatas. The borrower, the exact opposite is true. That the borrower is going to be obligated regardless of the case. If the cow died naturally, the borrower would be obligated. And if the cow died through something that was out of the borrower's control, he's also going to be obligated. So just like the socher is going to be exempt in either case, the borrower, the shoel, is going to be obligated in either case, and thus his oath doesn't carry with it a denial of a monetary claim either, and he's also going to bring a classic type of sin offering for a classic type of shvua. He's also going to bring a korban chatas. So that's the first case that the Gemara discussed, a case where both the renter and the borrower would have to bring a korban chatas. Now, pamim sheshneim ba'asham, you could have a case where they both need to bring a korban asham for an oath which carries with it a denial of money. Kegon shenignava, the amru meita machmas milach. If the reality is that the cow was stolen, and they're claiming that it died in the process of doing its normal work. The tarvayu kakafri mamona, in which case both of them are denying a monetary claim, both the renter and the borrower are denying a monetary claim, to hamechayvi, because really they should both be obligated, whether you're a renter or you're a borrower, in this case you're going to be obligated if the cow was really stolen, which is what happened, and they are saying that it died in the natural course of its work, which for both of them would make them exempt, and thus the oath that they're making is a denial of monetary obligation. Really, they're both obligated, and they're both making an oath saying that they're not obligated, and when it turns out that they lied, they're both going to be obligated to bring a korban asham, they're both going to be obligated to bring the type of korban that you bring for an oath, which carries with it denial of a monetary payment, because that's exactly what's happening in this case. So that is the second case of the Gemara. Now the third case, socher b'chatas v'shoa b'asham, you could have a case where the renter has to bring a normal sin offering because he did not deny any money in his shua, and the shoel, the borrower, would have to bring a korban asham because he did deny a monetary claim. Kegon shemeta kedarka, where the reality is that the animal died naturally, v'amru meta machmas melacha, but they claim that the animal died in the course of its work. So socher de bein kach u bein kach mifter pater chayav b'chatas. The renter is going to be exempt in either case. He's going to be exempt according to the real reality that the animal died naturally, and he's going to be exempt according to the claim that he's making, which is that the animal died in the course of its normal work. And thus, his oath doesn't carry with it a kfiras mamon. He's not denying a monetary claim, and he's going to be chayav a korban chatas, a normal sin offering for a common type of oath that doesn't carry with it denial of money. But shoel de mechayev b'meisa kedarka, the kapater nafshe b'meita machmas malacha b'asham. The borrower is going to have to bring a korban asham. Why? Because he would be obligated in the real case that actually happened, in the case where the animal died naturally, which is what actually happened, he would be obligated. And he's claiming that the animal died in the course of its normal work, which would exempt him. And thus, the oath that he's making is a denial of a monetary obligation. And when it turns out that he swore falsely, he's going to have to bring a korban asham. He's going to have to bring the type of korban you bring when you make a shvua that carries with the denial of a monetary obligation. That's the third case in the Gemara. And now the fourth case. Socher ba'asham b'shoel b'chatas. There's a case where the renter has to bring a korban asham for a monetary obligation, and the borrower only has to bring a korban chatas for violation of a normal type of oath. The case would be where the cow was really stolen, and they claim that it died naturally. So socher hu de mechayev b'gneva v'aveda, v'kapater nafshe b'meita kedarka ba'asham. The renter would be obligated according to the facts on the ground. if the cow was really stolen or lost, also would carry the same din, would carry the same rule. The renter would be obligated. And the claim that he's making is that the cow died naturally, which is going to exempt him. He wouldn't be obligated if the cow died naturally. So thus, the oath that he's making is denying a monetary obligation. He would be obligated, and he's claiming that he's not. So when it turns out that he swore falsely, he's going to have to bring a korban asham for violating a shvua, which carries with it denial of a monetary obligation. But shoel, the bein kach uvein kach chiyuv imechayev, the borrower, he's going to be obligated in any case. He's going to be obligated if the cow was stolen, and he's going to be obligated if the cow died naturally also. And thus, the claim that he's making is not exempting him from any monetary payment, and he is going to have to bring a korban chatos. He'll just bring a normal sin offering for violating a shvuas bitui, for violating a basic type of oath. And that's how you could have these four permutations. First, where they both bring a chatas, then where they both bring an asham, then where I believe the socher brings a chatas and the shoel brings an asham, and then the opposite, where the shoel brings the asham and the socher. I slipped up. The shoel brings a chatas and the socher brings an asham. Those are the four cases of the Gemara. Yeah.
Would list and mezuyim also pater both of them?
List and mezuyim is considered an ones. So what did
pater
we say?
Pater socher and pater shoel?
No, so a socher would be pater from list and mezuyim because ones, a socher is pater. Right. And also but a shoel, in this case, the shoel we're assuming is going to be obligated in the case of nens.
Even so. List and mezuyim?
I would think so because yeah. Mali, any ones, Mali list.
I'm just wondering why the Gemara chose this scenario because it's such an unlikely scenario. If it was actually stolen, how can they claim how could they claim mesa kedarko mesa machmasol? Give me the carcass. It's such an impossible scenario.
Yeah, it's an interesting.
I'm trying to think of another scenario that they could have illustrated the same dichotomy. Maybe I thought list of mezuzah might work, but maybe not.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting point. I'm not sure exactly. Right. What Moshe's pointing out is, let's say they claim that the cow was stolen. Let's say the cow was stolen and they claim that the cow died. Why doesn't the person just say, well, bring me the carcass if the cow died? So that's a good point. And he raises the case of list of mezuyim. If you have armed robbers, what would be the din in that case? Would they be obligated? Would they be exempt? In general, the Gemara assumes that armed robbers is considered an onus. It's something which is out of your control. There's nothing you could do about it. And the Gemara clearly said here that if you have a case of onus, if you have a case which is out of their control, the socher, the renter, will be exempt. The shoel, the borrower, will be obligated.
So yeah, the Gemara didn't say that here.
No, the Gemara said by Nensa. That was our first case, right?
Oh, Nensa.
So I'm extrapolating from Nensa to list of mezuyim because the Gemara all over, we already had, I think, what we did last week, that...
That's an onus. That's pure onus.
That list of mezuyim was considered an onus, right? Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. So that's the statement of Rabbi Yirmiya. These are the four types of korbanos that you could have. So ask the Gemara, my kamash malan. What are all these cases teaching us? Rashi basically points out that we have explicit mishnayos which tell us if you make an oath which doesn't carry a monetary obligation with it, then you're just chayav to bring a korban chatos. And if you make an oath which does carry a monetary obligation with it, then you're chayav to bring a korban asham. So why do I need all these permutations? There's basically one rule, which not only Gemara made clear at the beginning of this discussion, but there are mishnayos all over Shas which make this very clear. So why do I need all of these statements? So answer is Gemara, lafuke mi derbi ami. It's to go against Rabbi Ami, because Rabbi Ami says in Gemara Masech Teshvuas, to Amar kol shvua she'adayonim mashbiyin ota, en chayavin alea mishum shvuas bitui. Rabbi Ami says that any oath which is brought about by the Beis Din, any oath which the Beis Din extracts from another party, you cannot be obligated on for a shvuas bitui. You couldn't violate a basic common shvua through that oath. Shenemar o nefesh ki tishava levata visfatayim. Because the verse, when it describes a basic type of oath, says when a soul will make this type of oath, and we understand that that means kitishava me'atzma, when a soul, when a person makes that oath on their own, but not when Beis Din forces them to make such an oath. And in this case, we're clearly assuming that the Beis Din is requiring the person to make an oath, and nonetheless, you can still be obligated on a shvuas bitui. You could still violate a normal commoner shvua. Every case where we said you only have to bring a korban chatas because you're just violating a basic oath and not an oath which carries with it denial of a monetary claim, those are all shvuas bitui. So what this case is clearly coming to teach us is kamash malan deloka Rabbi Ami. It's teaching us that we don't hold a Rabbi Ami. We assume you could violate a normal commoner shvuas bitui, even if it's a shvua that's forced to be made by Beis Din. That's the beginning discussion in our Gemara about these different types of korbanos. Now we move on to the discussion we were mentioning before, and I believe it was Fred who was asking the question based on the Mishnah on Lamed Hamad Beis. which we're going to get to, discussing Shomer, Shemaser LeShomer, if a watchman gives over to another watchman. So Itmar, the Gemara says, we have the following statement. Shomer, Shemaser LeShomer, if a watchman gives the object that he's watching over to another watchman, Rav Amar Pater, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayev. Rav says the watchman would be exempt. He wouldn't be obligated for giving over the object to another watchman. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, you would be obligated. You're not supposed to do that. So the Gemara is going to explain what's behind each of these positions. Amar Abaye, the time of the Rav, says Abaye, according to Rav, who assumes that a watchman who gives over to another watchman is exempt, lo mi baye shomer chinam shemaser leshomer sachar, that's not only true by an unpaid watchman who gives the object over to a paid watchman, da'aluye aliye leshmira, so who's improving the quality of the watchman, if that's even the word, he's improving the quality of the observance of the observation. I don't know exactly what the right word is. The watching of the object, because we assume that a paid watchman is a higher standard of watching than an unpaid watchman. First of all, because he's being paid, we assume he'll take more responsibility. And in terms of the obligations that the paid watchman has, he's going to be obligated in more cases than an unpaid watchman. So says Abaye, when Rav says if a watchman gives over to another watchman that he's exempt, that's true not only if you're improving the quality of the watching, even if a paid watchman gives the object over to an unpaid watchman, where you're reducing the quality, you're lowering the quality of the watching, you're still pater, you're still exempt, according to Rav. My taima, why is that? Why are you exempt? Why is it totally okay, according to Rav, to give an object over to a new watchman? To Hamaser Leben Das, because at the end of the day, you're giving it over to somebody who's a capable human being, somebody who is intelligent, and we assume that they're able to watch the item sufficiently, and thus there's nothing wrong with you giving over the item to another watchman. Well, Tami de Rabbi Yochanan, and says Abaye, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who assumes that a watchman who gives over to another watchman is obligated, lo min baye shomer sachar shemaser leshomer chinam, that's not only true by a paid watchman who gives the object over to an unpaid watchman, degrui agara lishmira, so where he's reducing the quality of the watching, ela afilu shomer chinam shemaser leshomer sachar, even if it's an unpaid watchman who gives the item over to a paid watchman, daluye alia lishmira, so where you're improving the quality of the watching, still chayav, you're still obligated. The Amr Lay, and this is where we were discussing what Fred was mentioning, because the person who gave you the item can say to you that Ein Ritzoni Shia Pikdoni Biyad Acher. I don't want my item to be in the hands of somebody else. I gave it to you. I didn't want it to be in the hands of somebody else. And thus, even if you improve the quality of the watching by giving it over to a shomer who takes more responsibility than you do, that's not okay. That's not what I wanted when I gave you my item. Now says Rav Chista, Amr Rav Chista, Hadir Rav, the statement of Rav that a shomer shemaser leshomer, a watchman who gives over to another watchman and is exempt, lav b'feirish itmar, Rav didn't say that explicitly. Ela michlala, but the students in the yeshiva, they inferred that from Rav based on the following case, based on the following maisa. Dehanu ginai dechol yoma havu mufakti marayu gaba dahi sabta. There were a group of gardeners. There was a group of gardeners who every day would give over their plows, their spades, to a certain elderly woman. Yom achad, afgadinu legabe chad minayim. One day, rather than giving it to this elderly woman that they always gave their tools to, they gave it to one of the gardeners in the group. And shama kala behi lula, he heard some big noise in the wedding hall, probably some danger that was happening, but something big that was happening that he needed to attend.
Singing.
What's that?
It was singing.
You think it was singing? So why did you go to join?
Because it was a party.
I guess, yeah, it could be. I don't know. Oftentimes the Gemara says, Shomakala Behilu, that there was some type of danger that happened or something wrong. But I hear it could just be.
He heard the sound of the wedding.
He heard the sound of the wedding, so he wanted to go join. So Nafak, Azal, so he left and he went. And Afkadinu Lagabe Dahi Sabta, and he gave over the tools that he was supposed to be watching to that elderly woman who normally watched the tools. So Ad Azal V'Asa, while he went to the wedding, and by the time he came back, Ignov Marayhu, the tools had been stolen. So Ata Lakami de Rav, the group of gardeners came in front of Rav. They wanted to know, what's the din? Is this guy obligated because he was watching our items and they got lost? And Rav Upatre, Rav exempted the gardener who gave over the tools to the elderly woman who normally washed them. So man dechaza saver mishum shomer shemasa l'shomer pater. One who saw this maisa, one who saw this case happen, thought that the reason Rav exempted the gardener who gave the tools over to the elderly woman who normally washed the tools was because Rav holds that a shomer shemasa l'shomer is pater, because Rav holds that a watchman who gives over an item to a new watchman is exempt. And that's why they made this statement, which again, we just said, was not made explicitly by Rav, but was made by inference from the students who saw this episode. So they thought the reason Rav exempted this gardener is because he held that anytime a watchman gives over to a new watchman, they're exempt. Velohi, but says the Gemara, that was actually incorrect. They misunderstood the whole situation with Rav. Shiny Hasam, the reason Rav exempted the gardener in that case is different. They call Yom Manami Inhu Gufayu Gabod Ahisapta Havu Mafkadilahu. The reason Rav exempted the gardener in that case is because every single day they used to give their tools over to that elderly woman. So Rav assumed they're going to be okay with this gardener having given over the tools to the elderly woman who always washed them. Haraya, they let her wash them every single day.
Can't say Ein Ritzoni.
Right, exactly. You can't say Ein Ritzoni Shepikdoni Biad Acher. Again, this is according to Rav. We were only making that statement of Ein Ritzoni Shepikdoni Biad Acher, that I don't want my item to be in somebody else's possession, according to Rabbi Yochanan. But the idea is, the reason Rav held Shomer Shemasul Shomer is Pater in that case. Maybe generally he really would have held Chayav like Rabbi Yochanan. Right. But in this case, the reasoning of Rabbi Yochanan wouldn't make sense. You can't say that I don't want my item to be in somebody else's possession because they clearly were okay with it every other day of the year.
Which is a relief, because it would be a huge leap to assume that Rav holds that Hashem Achinam that gave it to Hashem Asacha, that gave it to Hashem Achinam, would be Pater.
Right.
Why would that be? What kind of logic, what kind of reasoning is that? That doesn't make any sense.
And it sounds like maybe, based on the Gemara, Rav wouldn't even agree by a Shomer Chinam Shemaser L'Shomer Sacher that they'd be exempt. Even if you improve the quality. Again, it's not clear, but we're ultimately
saying... That would be less clear.
That would be less good. That's what
Abaye... But it's impossible to justify Shomer Sacher to a Shomer Chinam.
Right. That's how Abaye started. He said, when Rav said that you're exempt when you give over, that's not just if you improve the quality, but even if you reduce the quality. So now what Moshe is pointing out is once we say Rav didn't really hold that, and it was really only learned from inference from this one case, which actually happened to be different.
Which is not relevant.
So probably Rav is not going to say it that you're exempt in a case where you reduce the quality, and maybe he won't even say you're exempt in a case where you improve the quality. Mm-hmm. Great. So that's the machlokas of Shomer Shemaser L'Shomer. And now we're going to get into quoting the Mishnah and raising it as a question, like Fred was alluding to before. Yotev Rabbi Ami v'ka'amar lo l'hashmaita. So Rabbi Ami sat down, and he taught this statement, Rashi says, what's the statement? He taught the statement of Rabbi Yochanan, his Rebbe, that a shomer shemasa l'shomer is chayev, that a watchman who gives over to a new watchman is obligated. So, Eitibe, Rabbi Abba bar Mamal or Rabbi Ami, so Rabbi Abba bar Mamal asked the question, according to Rabbi Ami, who seemingly holds of his Rebbe's position that shomer shemasa l'shomer is chayev. So we have a question from our Mishnah. Hasocher para mechavero, v'yishila l'acher, let's say somebody rents a cow from his friend, and he lends it to a third party, umesa kedarka, and the cow dies a natural death. Yishava asocher shemeta kedarka. The renter should swear that the animal died a natural death, which would exempt him. Vashoel mishalem asocher. And then the borrower, who's going to be obligated in a case where the cow died a natural death, is going to have to pay the renter who just exempted himself with his relationship to the person who gave him the cow, and he's going to get the value of the cow. So asks Rabbi Abba bar Mamo, based on this Mishnah, if Rabbi Yochanan is really correct that Shomer Shemaser LeShomer is obligated, if a watchman gives over to another watchman, he's obligated, then how could it be that the renter just makes an oath that the animal died a natural death, and then he gets the rights to the cow? The person who rented out the cow should say to the renter, I didn't want my cow to be in the hands of somebody else, so how can you possibly lend it to your friend? So if Rabbi Yochanan is correct, how do we understand this Mishnah? That was Fred's question. So answers the Gemara, Amr Leh, Rabbi Ami responds, that Hachu b'mayaskinan, b'shenot nulo, different gerses here, b'shenot nulo, habaylim reshut, or reshut habaylim lehashil. The case that we must be dealing with is where the owner of the cow gave the renter permission to lend out the cow. That really, Rabbi Yochanan is correct, that Shomer Shemaser L'Shomer is chayav, a watchman who gives over to another watchman is obligated. And this Mishnah is not a question on that. The reason the renter was allowed to give over the item to a borrower is because he got explicit permission from the owner. So ask the Gemara, Hachi, Lebailim Ba'ilishtume. If that's true, if the owner gave the renter explicit permission to lend it out to somebody else, then when the borrower is paying back the value of the cow because the cow died, he should pay it to the owner of the cow, not to the renter. Because the owner of the cow gave permission for the renter to do this, therefore it's as if it remains in the possession of the owner the entire time. So answers the Gemara, De Amrule Lidatecha. No, the case is that the owner who gave permission to the renter to lend out the cow gave him permission to do it according to his own will. He was basically saying, here's the cow, you're renting it, do whatever you want with it. So if the renter uses it, lends it in a way that he's going to be exempt, something will happen to the cow and he won't have a responsibility to the owner, but the borrower will have a responsibility to the renter, then the renter is the one who makes out with the money. He's the one who gets to keep the money in this case because he had complete discretion over the cow. The Bailim completely gave up that right. So thus, this Mishnah is not a question, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says Shomer Shemaser L'Shomer is obligated, and it also is not problematic to explain why the renter gets to keep the value of the cow. Must have Rabbi Bar Chama, but now we have another question. Yeah?
It's kind of a strange, if you think about it, the owner loses out, he gets nothing. The renter, who never really owned it, and he would have to pay rent, all of a sudden gets a windfall.
Yeah, that's what we had yesterday.
Right, yeah. So those
double windfalls
right,
yesterday.
Those are the details according to the Mishnah. These are the basic obligations. A renter is not obligated if the animal died a natural death. A borrower is. And thus the renter makes out like a bandit. He gets to keep the money of the cow. But Rabbi Yossi was bothered by the same thing that you're bothered with in the Mishnah at the end yesterday. This doesn't make any sense. It's completely crazy. How is this guy basically selling the cow, making a profit off this cow which doesn't belong to him? You have to return the value to the owner. So obviously there's a debate here. Rabbi Yossi finds Fred's argument very compelling. For whatever reason, the Tanakhama disagreed with that statement. So now we have a second.
Right,
he didn't really explain his reasoning, but we understand the reasoning was basically that you have to follow the strict letter of the law of the obligations. Socher is exempt of Meta Kedarka, so he makes an oath and he's exempt. Shoal is obligated to Meta Kedarka, so he has to pay back the person from whom he got the cow. Who was that? That was the renter.
Remember, by following the strict letter of the law, Rishlaim was never left.
Right.
You have to do Lefnim Mishuras.
Yeah. So that's what Moshe was just mentioning. It probably didn't come through on the Zoom, but Moshe was just mentioning that by following the strict letter of the law, Yerushalayim was destroyed. So we know the Ramban, all the Torah, speaks about in various places that we have to not just follow the strict letter of the law, but also the spirit of the law. Kedoshim Tiyu and Kitasa
Atov.
Vasita Yashav Atov, which is what Fred was mentioning also. Tamim Tiyay Moshem Elokacha. So obviously there's a tremendous value of following the beyond the letter of the law, the spirit of the law. We've seen already discussions by Mitzia, Baba Kama, about going lifnim Mishur Sadin, but it seems to be that what Tana Kama is saying, according to the strict letter of the law, you're not obligated. So now we have a question from Rami Bar Chama. Masiv Rami Bar Chama, Hamafkid Mo'ot Etzel Chavero, if a person deposits coins with his friend, Sroran Deif Shilan La'achorav, and the friend ties them up and throws them, you know, over his shoulder on a stick, or Masaran the Bita Livno Bito Akhtanim, he gives them over to his son or daughter who are young, who are below the age of adulthood. Vinal Bifnaim Shalokarawi, and another girsa is that it should be O Nal Bifnaim, but either way it's understood to be the same thing. Alternatively, if the person locks them up in an improper way, so then Chayav Shaloshamar Kedera Hashomrim, he'd be obligated for the value of the coins to the friend who deposited them with him because he didn't watch them properly. Mm-hmm. So infers the Gemara, time of diktanim. The only reason the person is obligated in this case is because he gave them over to his children who are young, hagidol and pater. But if he gave them over to adult children, he'd be exempt. So ask the Gemara, amai neimalei ein ritzoni shiapikdoni biaracher. How does that make sense according to Rabbi Yochanan, who assumes a shomer shemasel a shomer, a watchman gives over to another watchman is obligated? If a person gives the coins to adult children, the person should still say to him, I didn't want my item to be in the hands of somebody else, and therefore you should be obligated, not exempt. So Amar Rava answers Rava, Kol hamafkid al das ishto banav hu mafkid. No, it's assumed in this case that the person was okay with this guy giving the coins to his children, because anybody who deposits an item with someone is doing so knowing that he will likely give them over to either his wife or to his children. Amri Nardai, says Nardai, we have a diuk that shows that Rava is correct. Deikanami, we can infer that Rava is in fact correct from this case. Tiktani, because the case taught, oh, Shemasran, the bno ubito haktanim, chayav. Because the case explicitly said that if a person were to give the coins over to his son or his daughter who are below the age of adulthood, that they would be that he would be obligated. But we can infer from that that halivno ulevito hagadolim pater, if he gave them over to his son or his daughter who are of adult age, then he'd be exempt. And that's michlal. We can then infer further to la'acherim, if he were to give them over to people who were not his children, then lo shna gadolim ve lo shna ktanim chayav. Then it wouldn't matter if they're adults or they're not adults. Either way, you'd be obligated if they're not your children. Deim kein l'niktanim stama. Because if the only factor was whether they're young or old, but it doesn't matter if they're your children or they're not, then the case should have just taught that if you give them over to people who are below the age of adulthood, that you'd be obligated. And we can infer from there that if you give it over to anybody who is of adult age, you'd be exempt. But from the fact that the case specified that the people are ktanim, they're your children, and they're below the age of adulthood, that teaches us that if they're not your children, even if they're of the age of adulthood, you'd still be obligated. And shma mina, thus we can conclude, like Rava, that anyone who gives an object to somebody else is doing so knowing that they may or likely will give that item over to their children or to their wife. So Amar Rava, says Rava, how do we paskin in this machlokas Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, yeah? That sounds good. I can't remember exactly, but yeah, we're basically saying Nardai is the Chachamim in Nardai. If you look in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, you know, Zayin Amabez, the Gemara in Sanhedrin there lists all the various Chachamim who are often listed as Haim Amru or Amri Nardai or this or that. And the Gemara describes who all these people are. I'm not sure if it mentions Nardai explicitly in that Gemara or not, but it lists all the various Chachamim and explains who they are. But Amri Nardai is, of course, the teachers, the rabbis, the students in Nardai. Whether that was the Asra de Shmuel, the place of Shmuel, I can't remember exactly. It sounds good. Moshe, any idea?
I also, in my mind, I'm just associating Nardai with
Shmuel. Right, we have Moshe's Askam also, so I think that's correct, but don't quote me on that. Amar Rava, Hilchasa, Shomer Shemasa L'Shomer Chayav. Says Rava, the halacha is that if a Shomer gives over to another Shomer, a watchman gives over to another watchman, he's going to be obligated. Lo mi by Shomer Sachar Shemasa L'Shomer Chinam Degree Gar L'Shmiraso. That's true not only by a paid watchman who gives over to an unpaid watchman who's reducing the quality of the watching. Alafilu Shomer Chinam Shemasa L'Shomer Sachar Chayav. Even an unpaid watchman who gives over to a paid watchman who's improving the quality of the watching is still obligated. My Taima, why is that true? So Rava here is paskening like Rabbi Yochanan that a watchman who gives over to another watchman is obligated, but he's giving a different reason, and this is going to be important later on in the Gemara. Rava's reason is because the person...
Maybe it's an added reason.
Maybe it's an added reason. Maybe they would both agree, although we'll have to see how that plays out in the Gemara. But Rava says the reason is because the person whose item it is says to the watchman to whom he gave it, I trust you with the Shvua, with an oath, but I don't trust the next person who you gave it over to, and that's why you're going to be obligated because I only accept your Shvua and not your friends. And the Gemara is going to reference that discussion in a little bit. So let's keep going. Says Gemara Itmar. This is the sugya we mentioned in the beginning of Pasha Babiyatsas La'agam Umesa Kedarka, where a person was watching an animal and he was negligent with it, which seemingly would obligate him. But then the animal goes out to a swamp and it dies a natural death, which would have exempted the watchman. So Abaye Mishmei de Rabba Amar Chayev. Abaye, in the name of his Rebbe Rabba, says you're obligated. And Rava Mishmei de Rabba Amar Pater. Rava, in the name of Rabba, says you're exempt. And the Gemara is going to link this, as I mentioned, to Tchilaso B'Pshia V'Sofo Be'Onas, to a case where you start with negligence and then it ends in a case of something which is against your will. Abaye Mishmei de Rabba Amar Chayev. Abaye says in the name of his of Rabba that you're obligated, and he says Kol Dayana De Lo Dayin Ki Haidina Lav Dayanahu. Any judge who doesn't adjudicate according to this principle that you should be obligated in such a case is not a real judge. And says Abai further, this is true not only if you generally assume that if you start with negligence, but the case ends in something that was against your will, that you're obligated. So of course, in this case, you're going to be chayev, because that's essentially exactly what this is. But even according to the opinion that generally, starting with negligence and ending with something against your will is exempt, here you're going to be obligated. My taima, why would you be obligated in this case? Because we assume that the airspace, the bad air that was in the swamp, is what killed the animal. So even though generally if you start with negligence and it ends with something against your will, you should be exempt according to this position, here you're going to be chayav because it's clear that the swamp, which technically you might say is mesa kedarka, you might say that the animal dying in the swamp is technically a natural death. But no, according to Abaye, we're going to assume it wasn't a natural death. It's actually the bad air in the swamp that caused the animal to die. That's a direct result of your negligence, which allowed the animal to go out to the swamp, and thus you're going to be chayav according to Abaye. But Rava mishmei the Rabba Amar Pater. Rava says no. In this case, where it goes out to the swamp and dies, a natural death, you're going to be exempt. And kol dayana de lo dayin ki aydina lav dayanahu. Any judge who doesn't adjudicate accordingly is not a real judge. Lo mi ba'ilamanda amar tchilasa b'pshiyav asaf bonas pater. That's true not only if you generally assume that if you start with negligence and you end with something against your will that you would be exempt de pater. Here, of course, you're going to be pater because it's a pretty parallel case. You started with negligence, you ended with something against your will. El afil even according to the opinion that generally should be obligated, should be chayav, hacha pater, here you're going to be exempt. My taima, why should you be exempt in this case? Because we're going to say the angel of death doesn't care exactly where you are. It's going to kill you if you're in the swamp, and it's going to kill you even if you're not in the swamp. So even though this animal getting out to the swamp and dying a natural death was a direct result of your negligence, we assume it's not a direct result of your negligence. It could have died even if you weren't negligent, even if the animal had stayed in the house, and thus you're not obligated in this case, according to Rava. Even the Ma'ad Amar, the Kolash B'Siv Shabbaton is generally Schaiv. Yeah.
When you got to go, you got to go.
Right. I don't know. It's a good question. This Gemara seemingly would indicate yes, and I think you will find a lot of similar Gemaras like this with animals dying. I guess on a spiritual level, whether we really assume that, let's say, a person, you know, in today's world owns an animal and it dies, God forbid, it was that the Malach HaMavis who killed it. I'm not really sure. My nafkamina, but of course, God is in charge of, you know, Malach HaMavis. Yeah, God is in charge of life and death, and I think He controls the animal's life and death as well. Umodi Abaye, what's that? Right. So yeah, does the Malach HaMavis only have control over neshama? Does he also? Yeah, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure exactly. Says more further, Umodi Abaye di Hajal Beimara Umesa de Potter. Says Abaye, I would agree, even though I said according to both opinions, in a case of negligence that ends with something against your will, whether you assume you should be exempt generally or obligated generally, here you're obligated. But says Abaye, I'll agree that if the animal goes back to the house of the owner or to the house of the person who was watching it and dies, that you would be exempt. My taima, why should you be exempt? De hajala, because the animal went back to the proper place. And you can no longer say that it was the bad airspace, the bad air in the swamp that killed them, because the animal isn't in the swamp. When it died, it went back to the proper place. Umodi Rava Kolhecha de Igneva, another Girsa de Ganva, says Rava, even though generally I said that you should be exempt in this case of Pasha Baviyatsas La'agam Mesa Kedarka, whether you assume that negligence which ends with something against your will is generally obligated or exempt, here you should say exempt. But says Rava, I'll admit that if the animal is stolen, de Igneva or de Ganva Ganav Be'agam Umesa Kedarka Be'ganav de Chayav, that if the animal is stolen from the swamp by a thief, and the animal dies a natural death in the house of the thief, then you're going to be obligated. My taima, why should you be obligated in such a case? Dishavka, because if you had just left the animal, malach hamaves bebesa deganva havakaima, the animal, the malach hamaves, would have been present in the house of the ganav anyway, and it probably would have killed. No, I think it shouldn't be read like that. I think it should be my taima, dishavka malach hamaves. If the Malach HaMavis hadn't killed it in the house of the Ganav, the Beis HaDeganva have a Kaima. The animal would have been in the house of the ganav. The animal would have been found in the house of the ganav. It wouldn't have died, but it would have been stolen, and it would have been in the house of the thief. And you'd be obligated for that also. So it says, Rava, I'm going to agree that if the animal is found in the house of the in the house of the ganav and dies a natural death, you're still going to be obligated. Even though generally I said the Malach HaMavis doesn't care where the animal is, it's going to kill it no matter what. If the animal dies in the house of the ganav, you should be chayav no matter what, because had the Malach HaMavis left it over and not killed it, you'd still be obligated for the theft of the animal. Now ask the Gemara, Amar le Abaye le Rava, says Abaye, who held, in this case you should be obligated.
A question.
Right.
It was more than 24 hours.
If he never got healthy, he's fine.
Right. The pasuk says clearly that if you hurt the person and he goes on his bed and he never recovers, then you're going to be obligated. But im yakum behisalech b'chutz al mishanto v'nikamakeh, if he gets up and he recovers from this ailment, then you wouldn't be obligated. So the question is, how long does he need to be able to recover for, to live for, etc. So 24 hours, let's say.
It's more than 24 hours. 25 hours of things by an eved.
Right, by an eved.
Yeah.
So you're saying if he dies without ever recovering, then you're of course then you're gonna be obligated.
I want to extend that to the animal here. The animal has to live more than 24 hours.
Right, you're saying since it left the airspace of the swamp, because if it didn't, then maybe it really died because of the bad air in the swamp.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I think the Gemara's assumption here, when we say that it didn't die from the air of the swamp, so long as you know that it didn't die for sure from the air of the swamp. How exactly would you know that? That's a good question. So Amar Abaye le Rava, says Abaye to Rava, Lididach de Amarta Malach HaMavis Mali Hacha Mali Hasam, according to Rava, who said that you're going to be exempt in the case where you started with negligence and the animal goes out to the swamp and dies a natural death because the angel of death doesn't care where the animal is. So Haida Osvei Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel and Rabbi Ami, the discussion we had on Amud Aleph, where Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel posed the question to Rabbi Ami from the Mishnah, which said that if the person is renting a cow and lends it over to his friend, then he ends up being entitled to the payment for the cow. So we asked the question that should seemingly indicate that Rabbi Yochanan is incorrect, that Shomer Shemasr LeShomer, a watchman who gives over to another watchman, is not obligated. But the question was, why not say, Ein Ratzoni Shepikdoni Biyad Acher? Why not say that I don't want my item to be in somebody else's possession? Vishonile, and the answer that Rabbi Ami gave was, Bishananilu Bayle Meshus Lahashil, that case in the Mishnah was where the owner gave the renter permission to lend out the cow. Vilemele Malach HaMavis Mali Hachol Mali Hasam. Why didn't Rabbi Ami respond to Rabbi Abba Bar Mamo that the reason you're exempt, the reason that the renter gets the rights to the cow and not the owner, is because at the end of the day, we don't care. The angel of death doesn't care where the item is found. Since in that case, the cow died, we assume that Malach HaMavis was the one who killed it, and the Malach HaMavis doesn't care where the cow is found. So why wasn't that the answer that Rabbi Ami gave to Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel, rather than saying that the case in the Mishnah where the renter gets the rights to the payment of the cow was a case where the owner gave the renter rights to lend out the cow? So Rava responds, and this is where Rava's reasoning for Shomer Shemasr LeShomer being obligated because the owner only believes the one watchman with an oath, but not the second watchman with an oath, that's where Rava's statement comes back. Amrle, Rava answers, L'didchu de masnisu ein ritzoni shepikdoni biyad acher, ika le'ot ba'lahahi. You only could have posed that Mishnah as a question according to you, who explained that the reason a shomer who gives over to another shomer is obligated is because a person says, I only wanted my item to be in this person's possession and not in the other person's possession. But l'didi da'amina ant mehemenli b'shvua v'ha'eich lo mehemenli b'shvua leka la'os v'klal. According to me, Rava, who says the reason a shomer who gives over to a shomer is obligated is because he only believes one party in a shvua and he doesn't believe the other party in the shvua, then that Mishnah is not relevant at all. That Mishnah isn't relevant to our whole discussion of Shomer Shemasr LeShomer, because in that case, the renter himself is making the same oath that he was always obligated in to the original owners. So the owners can't say, I believe you with the shvua, but I don't believe the borrower with the shvua, because the renter is still the one making a shvua. Nothing changed in that regard. And thus, that whole Mishnah was never a question on Rava's explanation of Shomer Shemasr being a shomer shemasu l'shomer being chayav. It was only a question on Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel, that whole discussion, Rabbi Ami's explanation of shomer shemasu l'shomer being chayav, and thus this whole question doesn't get off the ground. Let's just finish with one quick meisave. Masiv Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama poses a new question. That. Yeah.
So it's not sure. So you have a case with a soaker who didn't lend it, who gave it to a show of profit. Right. Because you don't have the reasoning that I don't know if people are sure.
So yeah.
So you have Adim.
Right. So if there are no Adim. Okay. Right. That's an interesting point. Yeah, that's interesting. But it could be that the owner still wouldn't have a claim that I don't believe you with the shvua. In that case, you're saying because the renter isn't making a shvua, but I think because the edim take the place of the shvua, then maybe he still wouldn't be able to say, I only trust you with the shvua, I don't trust the bar with the shvua, because at the end of the day, neither party needs to make a shvua since we have edim testifying about the case. That would be my understanding in that case. So if we can do this, Mesevei Masiv Rami Bar Chama, Hela L'Rashi Tzukin V'Nafla, Ein Zeh Ones V'Chayav. Let's say a person takes the cow, the animal, up to a steep cliff, and it falls. That's not something against their will. You shouldn't have gone up to the steep cliff, and thus you'd be obligated. Hamesa Kedarka Harei Zeh Ones U'Pater. But if the animal dies a natural death, that would be something against your will, something that you couldn't control, and you would be exempt. So ask the Gemara, V'Amai, Lemele Avir the Harkatla. Inami Uptsina the Harkatla. This is a question on Abaye. How could Abaye say that it's the airspace of the swamp which killed the animal? In this case, you should also say that it's the air of the mountain which killed the animal, or it's the cold. Potentially, Rashi says another explanation of Uptsina, not cold, but the work of climbing up the mountain which killed the animal. So if Abaye assumes that you're going to be obligated in case of Pasha Babiyatsu Agam Meta Kadarka, you should also be obligated in this case. So says Gemara, Hachmayaskina and Shehela Lamir Shaman Vitov. No, the case that we're talking about is where you took it up to a nice green pasture with good air. So there's no claim that the air is what killed the animal, because here the air is good. So ask the Gemara, Ihacha Naflinami. If that's true, then you should also be exempt in a case where the animal fell. So says the Gemara, no, the case where an animal fell is not comparable at all, because shahayla l'tokfa v'lo tukfa, you should have held on to the animal and made sure it didn't fall. So it dying naturally from the air is not something that you could have controlled, but it falling is something you could have controlled. Yihachi says the Gemara emareisha alta l'rashi tzukin v'nafla hareze ones yibayle l'mitkefa. The beginning of that case says if the animal goes up to the top of the cliff and falls, that's against your will. But why should we say that's against your will? You should have held on to the animal and made sure it didn't fall. So it says the Gemara, Lo Shricha, Shek Takafto Be'alta, Takafto Be'yarda. The case is where you did try to pull the animal, you tried to make sure it didn't fall, but it was too strong, you pulled it and it controlled you and went up, you pulled it but it controlled you and went down, and that's how it fell, and that's why you're going to be exempt in such a case.